And welcome to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Another practice coming up in a little bit for the Giants, so we'll preview what to expect from that. This is going to be the last practice before they have a day off, and then they'll have their first preseason game on Friday at MetLife Stadium against the Steelers. We'll get into some of the position matchups and also recap what happened yesterday. And Jeff, it was interesting because I think the theme throughout training camp thus far has been that it seems as if the defense has been a slight step ahead of the offense just in terms
Covered
of
in.
Physicality,
yeah.
Right, in terms of execution. Yesterday's practice, to me, I thought the offense made some strides, and Sterling Shepard and Tavares King still sidelined because of ankle injuries, and you know, like anything else in the NFL, starters are down or key players are down.
The guys need to step
huge
up.
Huge opportunity, and a lot of the back-end wide receivers, I thought, made quite a statement yesterday. Some of these unknown commodities maybe to the fan bases, but you saw Travis Rudolph made a number of big catches. Yep. Keon Johnson, who's an undrafted rookie out of Virginia, made a few deep grabs. Exactly. And it seems as if a lot of these back-end players are taking advantage of their reps.
And that's all you can ask out of those young guys because, you know, their opportunities are very limited when it comes to the veterans in front of them. And I think that it just goes to show you that when your time is there, you need to perform. And my hat goes off to those guys, and that's what they have to do. You know, they have to take advantage of the opportunity, and they did yesterday. And listen, it doesn't hurt them. They, as they know from a receiving standpoint, it's a very difficult position not only to make in the NFL but with this team because of the depth that's there. But, hey, listen, you know, good for those guys. They come out and they show what they can do. More importantly, we talk about going into the game on Friday night. The first preseason game is really it's one of those opportunities, as I just said, for the young guys. There's going to be a lot of guys that play in that first preseason game because it's an evaluation. The veterans and the starters, you know, they're not going to see a lot of time. So it's a great time for those guys to go out and shine. And one thing that they have to do, Lance, is they got to get in that playbook, and they've got to understand the plays, eliminate the mental errors, and do things like that that they both do on the practice field and carry it over into the games.
And we saw specifically, you were talking about the wide receiver position, Jeff. Last year, it seemed in the preseason, the players that made the plays, such as Roger Lewis and Tavares King,
sure,
ultimately solidified their spots on the roster as a result of what they did on the preseason field.
And I think that it was a buildup. They continued to impress the coaching staff enough so that they could make the team, whether it was either on the active roster or on the practice squad. So that's what these young guys have to continue to do. They got to go out there and make some plays like they did in yesterday's practice, and they have to continue to show the coaching staff and the organization that they are NFL-caliber players and that they can understand the system, they can understand their playbook, they understand about other positions, meaning special teams. A lot of these young wide receivers will have to go out there and show that you can play special teams. Another position that somebody's going to have to play good special teams to make this team is the fullback position, because we know what Red Ellison can do. We know what some of the tight ends can do with that fullback / tight end position. So if they want to justify a guy keeping his job as a tight end, he's going to have to be able to do good things on special teams.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the fullbacks, Jeff, because Ben McAdoo was asked about that position yesterday, and he simply said, listen, whoever contributes on special teams is probably going to get a significant edge in terms of winning that battle. You have Jacob Usman and you have Shane Smith. Those are the two typical fullbacks on the roster. I know, obviously, we could talk about Red Ellison, and he described the difference between both players. Usman, what's interesting, Jeff, he was a quarterback in college,
sure,
so he's learning a completely different position, where Shane Smith has a little bit more of a background as a fullback.
And you might think that it would be a lot easier for a guy that played quarterback to understand the fullback position just because he knows every position on the field. I mean, the quarterback has to know everything about every position, what they're doing. But the fact is that, you know, I'd say 95% of the time the fullback doesn't have the football in his hand. And so he has to execute the play in a different manner than a quarterback would. So, you know, what a fullback has to understand is how to fit, how to get, use your feet and your hands, have a little bit of vision, blocking, use your size to open up that hole. And you know, a guy that played quarterback, that's not usually something that you do. It's never what you do playing quarterback. You're usually running away from guys. But it's a tough position, and I think that it's one that you got to watch going through preseason. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if they end up keeping a full-time fullback or not. It's just depend on how these two guys play.
And special special teams will certainly be a part of that. You know, just on a side note, Jeff, you've been around football for quite some time. Is that one of the most bizarre transitions that you've seen? I mean, we've seen offensive linemen, defensive linemen.
Yeah, that's a strange
quarterback
one.
To a fullback?
Well, I it's funny because quarterbacks are always so tall and lanky, you know, 6'3" and, you know, whatever. And you got a fullback here that he's just a round mound. I mean, the guy's like tough. That is a weird transition. I gotta honestly tell you, I've never have seen that type of switch before. Usually, you know, like you said, defensive line to offensive line, maybe, you know, yes, but that's a little bit strange.
Very bizarre. When I saw that, even when they were looking at the roster, I'm like, boy, this is going to be interesting. Now, quarterback to a fullback.
I apologize for not knowing much of the history of Jacob, but Jacob, right?
Yeah, Jacob
Huseman. But did he play any fullback in college, or is it just quarterback?
From what I remember.
That would be very remarkable if they could say, okay, this guy's a quarterback. Well, you know what, let's make him a fullback. That's a little bit strange to me. So there's got to be some sort of a path that he was there. Maybe he did play some fullback here or that, but because I'm trying to figure out how they go from a quarterback to a fullback.
Because it's an interesting transition. I will tell you, I mean, if you look at him, and you just alluded to this, Jeff, from a physical standpoint, he's fit to
absolutely.
Be a fullback.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's a problem. He's got the body structure to do that. It's just what you were touching on when you're so used to constantly having the football in
right.
your hands.
Yeah. He doesn't
you're
have
directing the traffic, and now you have to do a lot of the nuances of football that have nothing to do with having the football in your hands. That, to me, I think is a huge transition.
A huge transition, and I think what an advantage that he has is he understands football from a high perspective. You know, his
because
acumen
that's the
on football.
Position.
So he understands the game. He understands football. What he's learning is how to play the position of fullback, which is a learning process, as you know. Not to mention he's in the National Football League. This isn't like, you know, he's in a Division I or II school where he's, hey, you're going to go play fullback. This is a big jump from going from quarterback in college to playing National Football League fullback. So one thing that he does at an advantage because he understands how the plays are run, how they're supposed to be executed, that can work to his advantage.
And now you're going against linebackers at the NFL level, defensive linemen, a little bit different than, like you said, what you're doing in terms of orchestrating traffic at the collegiate level.
But again, I think that he does have an advantage in the sense that he's always looked across the line of the defense. He understands where the Mike linebacker and the Sam and the Will are lining up, where the safeties are in the box. He kind of understands where they are and where he has to be. From that perspective. So that can help him. I think the physicality of the position is one thing that he's going to have to get used to because he was always used to getting hit. Now he's going to deliver the hit, you know, and get up there and make a play and be the lead blocker.
What happened is, just to give some background information, he went undrafted in 2015. He was out of Tennessee, Chattanooga. And if you go back and you look at his numbers and that offense, I mean, he was putting up ridiculous
really?
Numbers. I mean, I've got him right in front of me. We're talking about he amassed nearly 9,000 passing yards, 64 touchdown passes. He ran for over 4,000 yards, and he had 43 rushing touchdowns. So he was more of those typical college quarterbacks like a Tim Tebow. I'm not saying he's Tim Tebow, but you run and you throw.
Right.
So he put up a lot of explosive numbers. He goes undrafted after he threw at his pro day. He then was with the CFL for a little bit. Nothing ever latched on, so he goes to his agent and he tells him, listen, I still want to pursue my NFL dream, but we're going to have to change positions. And that's really the background of the story. But, yeah, he put up really
impressive
numbers.
Absolutely.
At Tennessee,
and, you know, Chattanooga. He did have the football in his hand and running the football, as you alluded to. So that's going to help him. But very interesting battle at that position, and I think it's going to come down. That's one thing you need to look at the end of the preseason is how that position is going to shape up. Is it whether they keep an extra tight end and they don't use a fullback? I think this offense could really use a full-time fullback just because, you know, yeah, Red Ellison is a linebacker, but you don't want him being your 50 or 60% fullback back there. You'd like to see him on the line of scrimmage and helping the linemen rather than helping the running backs if you can afford it.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I guess the question is, though, if they feel that they want to keep more depth at another position, Jeff,
well,
you then say to yourself, you know what, Rhett Ellison can do both jobs.
Okay.
He may not be a full-time fullback, but we at least like his versatility, we could get by.
And the versatility is going to be what we just said. It's going to be, okay, do we want to keep this guy on the team because of his versatility and he can play special teams? He's going to have to be a really standout special teams guy for them to be able to keep him on the roster. Or either one of them.
Correct. I mean, that's obviously a big part of the conversation. 201-939-4513. Before we get to the phone lines, few injuries to note here. Ben McAdoo gave an update on a number of players. Linebacker Mark Herzlich, he's dealing with a stinger, so timetable for his return up in the air. He's day-to-day. Defensive tackle Robert Thomas had soreness, so that's why he was held out of practice yesterday. Cornerback Mykel Thompson is dealing with a quad injury. And safety Ryan Murphy and wide receiver Kevin Snead, they also missed practice due to injuries. And on top of that, defensive end Avery Moss left the workout yesterday early with a shoulder injury. So a few guys are banged up. They don't give a formal injury report leading into the first preseason game, so we're really not going to know who's going to play and who's not until about an hour before the game. But that's just to give you an idea that there are a number of injuries. And I would think, and Paul and I spoke about this a little bit yesterday, Jeff, I think they're going to be extremely conservative with Sterling Shepard. Even though he's making progress, to me, there's no need to rush him along.
No, I don't see him. In my opinion, I don't see him playing on Friday night. Why? Exactly. Let him, you know, they held him out of team drills yesterday, so he was doing a lot of individual stuff like that. So, listen, it's not going to hurt him to get an extra week of rest. Because he's one of your starters. So I don't see him playing a lot on Friday night, if any. So, you know, the other thing, too, is that I've seen this word now that they're using from the injury reports and guys sitting out of practice called soreness.
Big
that,
term. Oh, and lower
seems,
body and upper body, too.
That seems to be a new term that I'm seeing around the league is soreness. Now, I'm sorry, but if you play football, everybody is soreness. Everybody has soreness. Even the punters and kickers have soreness. But, you know, obviously it's probably a little bit more than that, but I think the term soreness kind of gives you a generic, I don't feel good somewhere, you know? So, I don't know. The soreness, it's just a little bit vague to me.
Like you said, the jargon has changed since you played. Well, the other thing that's interesting, it sounds as if the NFL injury reports become a hockey report. Because upper body, lower body, right? They never specify, and they do that for good reason. They don't want opposition to have an edge and know where you're really hurting.
Well, when you're playing with a stick and you say he has a right elbow injury.
Oh, sure. Thank you. That's a gift. Yes. I'll go right after that area. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. So that and listen, in football, it's everybody's sore at this time of the year. In fact, I think this is right about the time that you're in camp where a lot of the soreness, if you're a linebacker or the guys that are hitting a lot, that soreness in your neck and shoulders and stuff starts to go away a little bit because you get used to hitting again. And I'm only telling you this because of what I've been told and I've seen. Not that I ever had neck soreness from hitting or anything like that. But the fact is that these guys, you know, when they first come into camp, they haven't been hitting since, you know, really the end of the season. And they start going into 9-on-7 drills and some contact stuff, they get sore. And so this now they're ready to go, and the game on Friday will be fun. If you can believe it, football is finally here for the Giants. It'll be a good warm-up for the team. You know, one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, you have a lot of new people on the roster. So a lot of guys that weren't here last year, they don't understand how to go through pregame and how they think. So the Giants, they'll have a dress rehearsal in the next few days is how to come out of the at halftime, how to come out and before the game starts, where to line up, what drills we do, you know, pat and go, all that kind of stuff. So it is a little dress rehearsal before the first game. And you kind of, you know, not only for the players, but for the new coaches, the new training staff, anybody that's never been with the Giants before has to have a little warm-up, and that's what's the nice thing about the first preseason game.
Go through the motions, get comfortable what's going to happen in the regular season. One other quick note before we open the lines here, a transaction that the Giants made official right before we went on. They made a change on the offensive line. Jessamyn Dunker was waived injured, and they now brought in Corin Brooks, an offensive lineman from Texas Permian Basin, undrafted free agent. He was with the Chiefs. He was cut after June 17th, also played some left tackle in college, but he is expected to perhaps move inside here for the Giants. So
Texas
changing
Permian
with the depth,
Basin.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of that?
I can't say I have heard that. I was going to ask you if maybe you've tuned into some of their games here or there.
No. I think it was a couple years ago. I remember it was Corey Washington. It came from Newman.
Yes, very small school, too.
We had no idea where Newman was. So,
so that means that Miami doesn't have Texas Permian Basin on the schedule this season, Jeff?
Maybe.
You won't be observing that?
I would imagine that maybe some Division I school has them on their first game.
Yes, well, I
that's
think that's
a
fair.
It works. And I would also try to tell you that if they are playing that team, that team will get a nice paycheck at the end of the day to play, because that's usually what happens. These teams go out and they find teams to play as basically a scrimmage the first game of the regular season, because they can't scrimmage anybody else, so they pay you know, these universities pay these smaller schools, you know, up to $500,000 to come and play them.
Of course. So they're not going to turn that down. And look at this. Our production team is so on top of things. You
ask,
we get
it. This is a heck of a production team, I'll tell you.
The school is a state university located in Odessa, Texas. How about this? It was authorized by the Texas legislature in 1969 and founded in 1973.
Oh, it was authorized.
So there you go. It was authorized. We're really giving you the background information here on this program.
We got our A-team on the board today, man. We appreciate that.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. All right, let's open up the phone lines as we get the festivities going here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance? How you doing, Jeff?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Hello, Bash. What do you got for us?
I'm doing good. I'm wondering, asking about the 90-man roster and cutting it down to 53.
Yep.
I know they do that after week four now, after week four of the preseason. Now, who's responsible? Who makes that decision? And is the McAdoo solely by itself, or is that a collective thing as far as McAdoo and Reese and Mara and the coaching staff, or is that just McAdoo solely to make that decision as far as cutting down the roster?
Well, I think it's collectively. These guys speak every single day on personnel, and as all the players know, they're being evaluated both on and off the field. Everything they're doing in this building, they're evaluated on. So when that roster cut comes around, it's a collective meeting of the minds, and they kind of go through there, and I think there's input from both sides, management and coaching staff. Also bring in medical. You have the medical staff that comes in, and there's some guys that are hurt that you see that will happen today. They waive guys that are hurt, and the way that works is there's a timeline that the NFL sets out for injuries. If a guy's hurt with X type of injury, they say this is a six-week injury, and the team will cut them now to get the roster spot, and they'll pay them for the 6 weeks that they're going to have to rehab and get well. So all those things, all those factors come into rosters decisions, and it's both from the organization, the coaches, the medical, all of it goes into one. They have a big staff meeting to make that cut. That cut is a tough one. Now, this year it's different. You know, years past, you've had down to 65 guys and then to the 53. Now it's going to go all the way through, and it gives a lot of the younger guys. To be honest with you, the way the preseason shapes up, you got your first and second games where a lot of the veteran guys don't play a whole lot. The third game is a dress rehearsal for the regular season. This goes through all the teams. They play into the second half, sometimes the whole third quarter. And then that fourth preseason game is really – nobody ever wants to watch the fourth preseason game because there's no starters in there. And these other young guys are playing the whole game. But now with the expanded roster towards the end of the preseason, it gives these guys one last shot, number one, to get themselves on tape. And number two, one last time that the organization and the coaches can evaluate a player that's maybe on the bubble, one more chance to get in the game when typically they would have been cut maybe a week and a half before that.
Okay, and I asked that question because I wanted to ask about the defensive end unit, and I know they're usually going to keep six, and I know we have JPP and OV as the starters. Okora is going to be most likely the third, and we have the rookie, Avery Moss, that's making it. So we have the last two roster spots possibly be in the competition as far as Double O, I don't want to scratch his name, Kerry Wynn and Devin Taylor. So I was asking as far as that decision, because I know the Giants in history like to keep their draft picks or try and develop them, knowing that Double O is a third-round pick from three seasons ago. How is that going to work as far as in basically what City says in far as Double O and him being a third-round pick three seasons ago with those other two? And Kerry, I know Cy had an offer sheet from the Patriots, and they matched that. And Devin, they bringing Devin in this season as a free agent. So how is that competition going to end with those back three players as far as those two spots then, but O would be in a draft pick from a high draft pick three seasons ago?
Well, when you look at those three players, I mean, I think part of what will make the separation in terms of that group is the fact that Kerry Wynn can play inside and outside, and he's had the most experience at both positions. Devin Taylor, you know, we haven't seen him a lot on the field because he's been dealing with Jeff's favorite word, soreness, right now at this stage of the preseason, and he's mainly an outside defensive end as opposed to an interior defensive lineman. And Double O, it's the same thing. You know, injuries have sidelined him. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody specifically has an edge, and I wouldn't go so far to say that just because you're a third-round draft pick that you're automatically penciled in. I think that Kerry Wynn, to me, has the edge of those three, at least going into the preseason, because to me he has the most versatility.
Plus, you know, he can play the run very well. He has experience, started some games. And so, you know, really what comes down, it comes down to how they play. it comes down to health. You know, who can stay healthy when the final cut comes around, how they played in the preseason, and what is there going to be their durability and what is going to be their availability. And that's a big, big question is how durable and available are these guys going to be going forward? And that's a big question mark with a lot of the guys that we just mentioned.
Okay, and one more thing. I just heard you say, Lance, as far as that third pick, so that draft pick wasn't being considered as far as him being penciled in with him being a high draft pick just a few seasons ago, and the Giants, as an organization, always trying to develop their own players that they draft, so that wouldn't be effective. If he's not, as far as the factor with those three, and he played least on the year, don't hesitate to release him. As far as up below, wouldn't be a hesitation to release him with him being a draft pick. Do you understand, Lance?
Well, I just don't think that right now that gives him a huge edge. I think that's part of the conversation. But the bottom line is, if they're looking at the rest of the defensive linemen and they think that others can contribute more so than double O, I mean, I think that puts them in a very tough position to say, well, we got to keep the guy who was a third-round draft pick and surrender a player that we think is going to have much more of an impact on this roster. I mean, if you look at the draft history, you know, Andre Williams was a fourth-rounder in 2014, and he didn't hang around with the team much. And you could argue that, well, Andre Williams was a fourth-round pick. They should give him a little bit more leeway. And they decided to part ways with him. And then the Chargers picked him up. And, you know, he wasn't able to ultimately hang on with them as well. So, I mean, I think if you go by even track record, there's been some upper-tier draft picks, which I consider the fourth round and up, and they haven't hung around just because of their status.
Perfect.
I just wanted to ask about that. That was it. Thanks, fellas.
You got it, Bash. Yep. Appreciate the phone call. I mean, it's a fair question. I mean, do you feel, Jeff, that when a player is drafted at a certain spot, that sort of gives them a little bit more security when it comes down to cutdown day?
I think maybe a little bit, but I think it's all about performance. I mean, we talk about it all the time. I mean, this game is about performance and what can you do for me now, not what you can do for me 3 years ago when you were drafted. You know, the draft picks don't work out. You know, Andre Williams is a good example you brought up, and I think that going forward, you know, as an organization, you hit and you miss, and sometimes you're not going to sit there and sacrifice the production of the team because you drafted a guy and he's just not producing. I mean, if you got a guy that's going to play better than the guy that was drafted in third round, you hear general managers say all the time, you know, we want the best 53 guys on the team to make the team better. And not only that, they're always looking to improve their roster. And just because you're a high draft pick, that it may give you a slight edge, but I think the bottom line here is about production and what you can do to help this team win, and that's what's going to – the bottom line, and when they're making the cutdowns, that's what it comes down to.
Well, and I think this is another factor, Jeff, that I wanted to bring up as to why it's not so easy for earlier draft picks to say, oh, well, where I was selected gives me an edge, because look back at last year's draft class, Jeff, which I have up right here. I mean, think about how many of these players – are in line to start this season,
which is very rare
compared to some of the previous draft classes.
I'm looking here. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Thompson, Goodson, and Perkins.
Yeah.
Five of those picks are in line to start, not contribute. We're talking about being on the field when the game starts. And then Jarrell Adams, you know, has an opportunity to step forward in terms of his progress. Clearly, he has a lot more competition than the other spots because of the arrival of Evan
and
Ingram
go to the year before
Ellison.
That.
Yeah.
And look at this. You got Eric Flowers, Landon Collins, okay, 00. And then you got Mikal Thompson, and then Jeremy Davis, who isn't here, and then Bobby Hart. So, I mean, of those guys, you got some starters mixed in there, too. So the last three draft classes, you got a lot of starters on this team. So you talk about teams that build through the draft. Now, historically, going back a few years back, the Giants have lost a lot of guys that were drafted that didn't play. And they're not on the roster anymore. But if you look at the last three draft classes, there's a good proportion of these guys that are drafted are going to be starting on this team. And that just goes to show you how well that Jerry Reese and his staff has done in drafting in the last 2 or 3 years.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. We got Charlie in Portland. Charlie, what's happening?
Charlie!
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Lance.
How we doing, Charlie?
Hey, man.
Charlie. Charlie, hold on.
We had to play it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hallelujah. Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we
See,
when I'm on the program, I don't like to give Charlie that much credit, so I avoid playing that at all costs. I let you and John play that.
John always hits it.
But he does.
And I just happen to look
never
over,
play it.
And on our board it says Charlie open, and I just hit play. So there
I
you
don't
go,
think
Charlie.
Anybody's moved
you
it.
You now
from
have
that.
Had your
yeah.
formal introduction.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, only thank him, because I don't deserve any credit for that, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. I'm surprised you haven't taken the button off the computer.
Trust me,
yet.
I'm working on it. And don't give me any ideas.
Hey, how come Mr. Illness now is Mr. Soreness? I mean, what's going on with that?
Oh, boy. I tell you.
Well, I don't know if you listen to the open, but I don't understand this soreness thing. And I think you probably agree with me that, you know, everybody's sore. So, but, you know, now you will have to change your open so there's no more Mr. Illness. It's Mr. Soreness.
But there's everybody that pretty much is thrown under that umbrella. It's not
yeah,
just one
exactly.
particular person. Yeah.
Hey, I can't believe it. We have just fixed our O-line problem.
Oh, please
we
save
just,
the sarcasm.
Just,
you know,
just got
oh,
our
my God, Charlie,
I mean,
save the sarcasm, please.
You know, undrafted free agent. And this is what he says about himself. He says, my greatest strengths are athleticism, composure, and technique. And he says, I work well with my hands. There we go. You know, I mean, Jerry Reese has done it again. I mean, the O-line is complete. I'm so happy about this signing.
Charlie,
the enthusiasm is overwhelming on your part.
So I'm just curious, and Charlie, I think a lot of the fans of the show may want to know this. So when you watch a football game, what is exactly are you looking at every time you watch a game? Are you watching the whole game, or do you specifically just watch the offensive line?
No, I watch the whole game, but when we're on offense, I watch the offensive line to see if they're protecting Eli, to see if we can run the ball. You know, because that's where it all gets started, you know. So that's I kind of watch that on the offense. Because usually if Eli's throwing an interception or he's throwing the ball away or he's getting rid of the ball, there's a reason why he's doing it so quickly. And I kind of watch the line to see if they help contribute to that, situation for Eli.
I can tell you what Charlie's going to be watching this season is lobsters and how many he's going to be heading your way, Jeff.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what he's going
can
to be
I
watching
get,
this
can
season.
Can I get a
few is playing tonight, so you should watch it, Jeff, because he's going to ball out tonight.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Okay, so I think I am back on the air on Friday.
Yes.
So I would like you to, Charlie, call in and give me the box score on our boy.
Okay. On Anthony Dable, just so the audience is not lost. Yes.
Right.
What's the over-under catches for Mr.
Oh, Vegas has said that? Yeah. I didn't realize that.
I don't know.
Oh, Vegas has? Well, Charlie said it at least.
Oh, yeah.
We know Charlie
but do
is
me a favor. Call back Friday and let me know.
Yardage, and he's going to have at least one touchdown. That's my prediction.
Oh, my
God.
It's
amazing.
What are you smoking?
See, he doesn't have time to watch the Giants offensive line. He doesn't.
All right, well, listen.
I have one more question for you guys.
Sure.
We got the preseason game coming up. Do you think Eli's going to play well? And how many starters are actually going to play more than, like, one series or five snaps?
To answer your first question, I don't think that Eli will play. I think that their emphasis is to try to find that backup quarterback position. I don't know even how much, Mr. Webb is going to play this game. He might get a series or something in there, but I think that's as far as the quarterback position. As far as the starters go, I think there's probably some of the guys that may be penciled in as starters that, that they need to see some reps. They need to see some guys coming back from injury that can play and get in there and get their feet wet in a real game because it's been a while. But I think that the first preseason game is all about evaluating your roster and seeing how many guys can get in and give us some game film and see how it goes from there. But I wouldn't anticipate both teams playing much of their starters at all.
And, Charlie, remember, Eli did not play the first preseason game and the last preseason game last year, just to provide as some comparison to perhaps what Ben McAdoo is thinking. And, you know, the other thing is, and I think you brought up an important note there, Jeff, there's value to playing, to me, a Darian Thompson.
That's what, yeah.
Who was very limited last season.
Yep.
And B.J. Goodson,
yep.
too. I mean,
yep.
even though he's penciled in to be a starter, you want him to get more reps.
Sure.
He only had 13 defensive reps last season. So there's value in playing those types of starters as opposed to the polished veterans who we already know, obviously, what we're going to get out of.
Well, make
so
sure.
Do you think they're going to make sure the offensive line plays quite a bit just in sync?
I think there's value to that as well.
Yeah, well, listen, I got to believe that the offensive line as a group is going to come out for a series or two. And then this is just my guess, folks. This is nothing, you know, in concrete. We have not been told of anything. But just from experience and just for discussionary purposes, I have a feeling that the offensive line probably needs to get a couple, maybe one or two series together and just kind of, you know, so they can get used to playing a game.
Yeah, I think they should probably play the whole game myself just to see what Flowers and Hart are really going to do.
Well, but remember, Charlie, you know, keep in mind, they also need to get reps for the back-end guys to see what they have depth-wise, too. I mean, you know, yesterday you called up and you were talking about having Plan B in place in case there's an injury. Well, this is the games that you want to see. For example, Chad Wheeler and Adam Biznavati, those two should get plenty of reps to see truly how effective they are at both respective tackle spots.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but they're going to end up playing probably the second and third string defense of Pittsburgh.
Well, so I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the earlier you get them in the game, perhaps you can even maybe see some of them against some of the borderline number twos and number ones for the Steelers. Remember, there's guys competing for spots on Pittsburgh as well. Let's not forget about that. Yeah,
it's got to be interesting. We'll see what happens.
All right, Charlie, make sure you call back on Friday. I want to hear about
full report on Anthony Doble.
We'll see. Okay, guys.
Box score.
If you talk to John, give him my best. Congratulations and on his new baby. And hope everything's fine. And
thank you.
Go from there.
We will.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Do the same.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. You should prepare some lobsters for the family, too.
Oh, this
is
coming.
Yeah.
Don't forget about those
Jeff,
potatoes,
yeah.
too. I want the whole
side
nine
dishes,
yards.
Correct. The whole nine yards.
Yeah.
I mean, show Jeff what a meal is like in Maine. That's the whole goal.
It was the easiest bet I ever made. It's the easiest bet I'm ever going to win.
You're stealing money, essentially. Yep. I mean, that's what it is.
For those who don't know the bet, it was basically Charlie Fields at Anthony Dubois, or whatever his name is.
Anthony Dubois.
Dublé. Dublé, is that his name?
Dablé.
Dablé. Listen, I'm consistent. Dubois. I consistently butcher names.
Well, Biznavati, you managed to add like three syllables on last week's show.
Biznavati.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so if he's going to be on the 53-man roster for the Atlanta Falcons.
That was the prediction by
Please.
Charlie. Yeah.
So, and the bet was he gets to come down here and be on our show, or I get a nice Maine lobster dinner from him. They will be sent to
me. We're creating space on the table by the day.
I'm a giver. And
to
so
make sure.
I will make sure that there's enough for us, you know, so that we can all indulge in the feast.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should eat it on the show and
no
force
question.
Charlie to stay on the line for a good 20 minutes.
Have him put on a waiter suit or whatever you want to call it and have him serve it to us.
So here's the thing. He should be invited regardless of whether he loses because he should be the one serving you the dish. Not only should he send it to you, but he should also serve it to you. That should have been an added addition.
It's a long drive up there from Maine to do that. But,
well, you know, Charlie's got a lot of time on his hands. If he can watch Anthony Doble run reps.
Obviously, if he calls in every single day, we know he has a lot
we
of time.
Know, exactly.
So,
all right, let's head back to the phone lines. Travis is in Queens. Travis, what's happening?
Hey, Travis.
Hey, guys. How you guys been? It's been a while since I spoke to you guys.
Doing well, Travis. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. I'm calling about the linebacking crew. I think going into the preseason and the regular season, you know, I kind of think that's the biggest weakness on the defense as a whole, the lack of speed.
Well, it has been for some time. So, you know, listen, I think that, in my opinion, this linebacking crew, if they can play well and they can be on the same page and to get a little less substitution in there with Keenan Robinson on some of the passing downs, you bring down that three safety look and help out with a little bit. You know, I think that really, I think you're right. I think there is a little bit of question with some speed there, but we're not talking about guys that run, you know, 5.3 40s out there. I mean, they do have some good speed. I think they can work as long as they can get where they're supposed to be and know their responsibilities and cut down on the mental errors. In the National Football League, you're going to give up plays. You just want to give up a lot of big plays, and I think that they can build on that.
Right, because I think, you know, if you look around at, like, the NFC as a whole, the running back position is big. And, you know, a lot of those guys, they're versatile. They can run the route. And, I mean, and I think this year going in, a lot of teams, you know, that's their way of going to try to attack it somewhat depending on, you know, how the game is going. But that's what I'm most really concerned about this year is the linebacker.
Well, I think the concern from my standpoint is that you're gonna start a rookie. Well, he's not a rookie, but he's basically a first-year starter. At middle linebacker to be able to handle a lot of the responsibilities of getting guys lined up. It seems to me that he's handling that pretty well. I mean, I think the addition of Antonio Pierce here in practice, having him played that position and being able to help him from that standpoint is tremendous. And it sounds to me like he's up to the challenge. He's doing well, and we'll just have to see as the games go by. You know, because when you look at that linebacking position, there isn't a lot of depth there.
Right.
And so you got to count on those guys being healthy throughout the season, which, you know, the linebackers can never stay healthy throughout the year, but we'll see what happens. I think that Jonathan Castillas is a heck of a football player. He's a great mind on the field, and he'll help B.J. Goodson out a lot.
The last linebacker we had that had some speed, I believe, was John Beeson, I think. You know, that was real, you know.
Sure. I mean, great, not great speed, but yeah, I think game speed. You know, a lot of these guys have game speed. You know, you always try to evaluate the guys on their 40 speed, but, you know, there's a thing called game speed where the guys can get from point A to point B quicker than they can get from, you know, in a stance running 40 yards. It's just, you know, it's just how you play the game, and really fundamentals and technique will dictate a lot of times how you make plays, even though you might be a little bit a step slower. But if you're in the right places at the right time and where you're supposed to be in the scheme of the defense, that'll bode well for you.
It's funny. I thought, Travis, you were going to throw out Jaquan Williams. That would have been maybe one of the names that I would think of in terms of speed or quickness sideline to sideline. But similar to Beeson, you know, he had trouble staying on the field and remaining healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the biggest issue, that when the Giants, to me, have had some players with potential who have showcased speed, durability has been a huge question mark.
That's why I think, you know, they could have went either way. I think Zach Cunningham or the tight end that they just got. I think either way would have been suitable for the Giants. You know, either way you look at it, because you know at least they add to the linebacking crew, and you know with the tight end position. I mean, with the Shepherd injury, it was kind of like, you know, thank God we got Everett and whatnot. You know, just, you know, to be on the safe side, but, you know,
I think the Giants should be okay, though, going forward.
Yep, they're going to be good. I mean, take a look at that position in the preseason. I think, really, if there's one guy you want to look at, it's probably B.J. Goodson. Right. I think Castillas and Kennard are veteran guys. I think they're getting better. You know, Castillas is the fastest of all those guys. You know, he's good in there, you know, and Keenan Robinson isn't a particularly quick guy and from a 40 standpoint, but he has good game speed. He has a lot of knack for the football too. So,
and he's a good coverage guy too.
Eli, keep on that glove. I think we might be looking at an MVP. I like him with that glove on for some reason. If Eli can keep on the right glove he wears, like during the practice and all of that. See, he was wearing it in the Green Bay game.
He did utilize the glove. I mean, I don't know if that's that much of an X factor as you're alluding to, but I think it's more the weapons around him, Travis, making plays for him than necessarily what comes off of the glove. But do appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's head back to the lines. We got Matt in Philly. Matt, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys. What's going on? Great show. Love it.
Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it.
All right. I wanted to make an Eric Flowers point, but I had a real quick Jeff Fiedel story that I wanted to just bring
up. Oh, boy. Easy. Yeah, was, easy now.
Don't spill all the skeletons out of the closet.
So, this is probably like 2007, 2008 season. You're playing in Philly. Sunday night game, absolutely freezing. And I had like seats right behind the Giants bench, like five rows off.
All right.
And I was right by it, Jeff. And it was so funny. Every time you would go and punt, you would go out, rip a great punt, right? And then you would sprint as fast as you could.
Back to that
to
bench.
The bench.
Of course.
And then I don't know if you would throw your cleats off or what you would do, but you would jump in these huge sweatpants, bigger shoes than yours, wrap yourself in a jacket, and sit there until the next time you have the punt, you do it all over.
Listen, I you know, that's the way I played the game and when it's cold. I got on the field, I got off the field, and I became a fan. I got on the bench, I grabbed my every warm piece of clothing I could find, and yes, I did change my shoes because I wore two sizes smaller than my normal kicking shoes, so I'd take it off. And I would just sit on that bench, and really, because you can't see much from the bench because all the players are in front of you, so I'm just like a regular fan. I'm watching the Jumbotron, watching the game. That's all I did. Kept nice and warm.
That's great.
The only thing I didn't have was beer and hot dogs. That was it.
Exactly. Good stuff. The point I wanted to make was kind of like with Eric Flowers. I just wanted to talk about him for a little bit, just kind of get your guys' concerns on him. I think I hear all like the great stuff and that, you know, all that he put in the work in the off season, and I'm real excited about the upcoming season here. I'm hearing all good things throughout the team. But I'm keeping a close eye on him. I haven't heard that, like, the hard work that he's put on has really translated just yet, or he's still working on some technique issues or whatever the case may be. And tell me if I'm wrong. I hope you do. But my concern is that if we can't shore that side up, like, how much better can we improve than, like, last year if Eli's uncomfortable? Your thoughts, guys.
Well, my thought on Flowers is the fact that, you know, even though you are going to go into the off season, I mentioned this earlier in a program too, not this one, but another one, is that, you know, these are things that have been identified at the end of the season. The coaches have told them these are the things we need you to work on. He took the initiative to go out and do the things that they wanted him to do. Now it's time to be able to take those things that he worked on and put them onto the field in real live situation. Up until this point, week and a half into practice, he hasn't been able to do any of that stuff. You look at the OTAs, and they're very limited hitting and things like that. So now he gets a chance to go out there and work on some of the things that he has been working on in a full capacity. Now the next step is a game. Go in there and show that you can do these things that you worked on in a game. And I can tell you this, you know, it can't get any worse, I don't think. So I think the needle is pointing forward and try to transition the things that he worked on in the offseason into the game situation. And I believe that the addition of Red Ellison is going to help Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart, because now they can have a reliable guy out there that can help them. Because, listen, we know that our tight ends and the Giants and the past few years have not had the greatest resume as far as blocking. Red Ellison is an NFL caliber, one of the best blocking tight ends in the league. That's only going to help Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers. Okay, so that's going to help their technique. That's going to help the line. That's going to help the running game, the passing game, all collectively. It's going to be good. That's why they went out and got him. They didn't get him out there to catch touchdowns and catch, you know, 50 balls.
Yeah.
They got him to play, you know, every game and get out there and help in the blocking and the running game.
You know, the other part of the running game, or a pass protection, I should say, that shouldn't be overlooked, and I'm not saying it's a concern, but Paul Perkins is still a very young player, too.
Yep.
He got some experience late in the season, and I think he made strides in terms of his pass protection, but Rashad Jennings is not here anymore, and Jennings was very strong in pass protection. We know Shane Vereen is strong in that department, but if Perkins is going to be on the field a lot, and he does stay on the field on third down, you know, that's going to be something that everybody has to monitor as well, that he's confident that he can serve as that extra layer in addition to the tight ends to protect Eli Manning.
And not only on third down, but, you know, a lot of times the Giants will come out on first down and pass. So you got to be able, just because you're in there on first down, doesn't mean you don't have to pass block. So, you know, that could be, there's something that he has to improve on that. I know that he's getting better at it, but I think that the maturation of Paul Perkins, we saw with our own eyes last year towards the end of the season, and it's only getting better. I think that, you know, Wayne Gallman is another guy that you have to look at, who is a very, I mean, he hits the hole quick, you know, Orlean Darkwa. You might see this three-headed monster with the running back situation this year, and throw Vereen in there too. So I think from a running back perspective, I think the Giants have, each one of those have a little bit of different skill set, but all four of them collectively have to be better at pass protection to help out the offense.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
That's reassuring. Yeah, absolutely. I'm absolutely pulling for these guys on the line. It's great to see that they put in the extra work. So if anybody deserves to have improvement and a better year, it's those guys. So
no
I'm
question.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome.
You got
show.
It, Matt. Appreciate the phone call.
You
thanks
know,
so much.
You know, Lance, when you look at the, you know, kind of looking ahead a little bit as far as who the starters are going to be on this offensive line, you know, I figure you pretty much have the five guys that were there last year. So, you know, they not only did they play all together last year, you know, some guys were out of lineup. Hugh was not in there, you know. But my point is that they're coming into a second year of playing together as a cohesive unit. And it's not like they brought in three different linemen and they're going to insert them into a brand new offensive lineman. That the line group, that's going to help this group, that they have been working together for a whole season last year, the whole offseason this year, and now into the preseason coming up. That's only going to help them, along with all the improvements that all these guys have been doing in the offseason. You know, Richburg and Pugh and Flowers and Bobby Hart and all these guys, they didn't just sit around doing nothing. They all were working on their craft and working on their skill set to be collectively better, because we all know on this program is that we a lot of guys talk about the offensive line, and they need to. So you really want to look at these guys going into this season and see how much they are going to improve. And if they do improve, how much better this offense can be. How much better this offense can be, rather than putting up 19 points a game. You know, go back 2 years ago when they were averaging almost 30 points a game. That's what you want to see out of this thing. So, I mean, you get that defense running like they did last year, and you get the offense producing like they did 2 years ago, this is a very dangerous football team.
Yeah, the team dropped off by a touchdown from 2015 to 2016. That's extremely significant.
Exactly. And then you look at the year that the offense was good, the defense was horrible. Last year, the offense wasn't that good, and the defense was. Now put those two together.
Want to match.
And now you can put them together and play with good special teams. This team's got a chance to win. They got a chance to be good. And go far. You know, they haven't won a playoff game in over 5 years. So I think that's kind of the goal. I'm somewhere in this building. I know that it's written down on some wall or something that, you know, you got to get to the playoffs. The quickest way to the playoffs is win your division, and maybe get a home game in there. It would be nice.
And in terms of improving the offense, more balance on offense, in terms of the running game and having consistency where the running game is a threat. That doesn't mean that you have to run for 150 yards every game, but you want the opposition, Jeff, to get to a point
for it.
Correct. The game plan that respects the running game.
Yeah.
And that was very up and down, flashed a little bit towards the latter part of the season. One of the things you just touched on was continuity on the offensive line, which is what I always bring up. And I think if you go back to last year, there are two things that I think could easily get overlooked. Number one, Marshall Newhouse started the season as the starting right tackle, Jeff. Remember, then he got hurt.
Yep.
Then Bobby Hart took over, and then Bobby Hart never lost the job. He retained that. So Bobby Hart technically was not the full-time right tackle starter.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that he didn't get a lot of reps next to John Jerry, but he wasn't there for all 16 games in every single practice. Then on the other side, let's not forget Justin Pugh misses a significant portion of the season because of the knee injury.
Yep.
And then Eric Flowers is now playing next to Brett Jones and a few other guys. John Jerry was moved over to the left side at one point. So even though you pretty much had that group on the field for the most part,
it was a lot of mixed.
Exactly. But we can only hope for that, but we can't predict injuries.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe what the fan counter to that is going to be, okay, so what happens if injuries happen again this season and they play the game of musical chairs? How many times are we going to point to that?
Be careful. Charlie
being an
might
impact?
Be calling back.
Well, and that's why, you know what? I'm throwing it out before Charlie even can get to it. We're counter-arguing our own arguments here.
Yeah.
Meaning that where do you get to the point, Jeff, I guess is my question mark, where, okay, so we've seen some continuity, then we've seen some interruption with injuries. If that happens again, you know, where do you draw the line to say, well, you still need to be able to overcome that, even though there have been some changes on the O-line?
Well, I think you look at your depth. You got to see who you got behind you that can, you know, if you do have those injuries, you know, do we feel confident in sticking this guy there without, you know, usually when one guy comes out, a lot of times it could cause two other position moves. You know, a guy has to move from right guard to left guard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you build the team through depth, and you want to be able to, if the one guy comes out of the lineup, you can really easily replace him with just one lineup change rather than doing the domino effect where the right guard moves to the left guard, the center stays there, the right guard or the left, you know, it's just, there's a lot of moving pieces to this. Your depth will be able to help you out with that. And I think that the Giants have gone out, they drafted some guys, they drafted Biz. I call him Biz. I'm not going to go
works.
There.
No, Biz is perfect.
And
very
the fact
suitable.
That, you know, I think that he's and Fluker, they bring in as a free agent. So these are some guys that can play. And so that's kind of my answer to your question is you got to have some depth and believe in the depth and have the ability for these guys to fill in a pinch. You're not asking your depth guys to come in and play a whole season unless there's a severe injury at some point in time. But the fact is we want to get these guys through. They can play 1, 2, 3 games and then get the starters back in there.
Well, but I think you probably feel better, though, Jeff, DJ Fluker is one player, and DJ Fluker has experience at guard and tackle, and then Brett Jones, who I think sort of gets overlooked. I'm very high on Brett Jones. I think he's an extremely versatile offensive lineman because he can play center, and you can also move him to left guard or maybe even right guard, depending on how the dynamics play out. So I think the Giants are at the point, assuming these five win all their starting jobs, if you then enter the season, Jeff, with Brett Jones and DJ Fluker as your two swing offensive linemen.
Adam Gettis is another guy,
but the good thing about Fluker and Jones is you've got two players that, to me, can be interchangeable.
Yeah.
And most teams only have, you know, a guy that can just play tackle or a guy that can just play guard or a backup center. You have some versatility, and you also have experience. Fluker has experience, and Brett Jones hasn't been in the league as long, but Brett Jones played a lot of games last year. And he's still making the transition from the CFL, but I thought it was very smooth because I never got the feel, Jeff, that when Brett Jones was in, that he was a liability. I think he made the transition quite smoothly.
Stopper.
Correct. Where he's comfortable, you put him in there. Nobody's saying he's a Pro Bowler, but you know what? He could get the job
reliable.
Done. Yeah.
A reliable
and that's what you
guy.
Need.
And you do need that guy. You know, one of those guys, you know, David Deal was a starter forever, but David Deal, he could play all positions, you know? You got to have one guy like that. And, I mean, you look at the right side, Fluker's your guy there. Adam, you know, Jonesy can go play. He can play anywhere if you really need him to, except for maybe tackle. But I think that interior-wise, he can play. He's a smart guy. He knows every position. One of the prerequisites of being a lineman, a good lineman, is understanding to play different multiple positions. So, and that's what they you see it all the time at practice. You'll see a guy taking snaps at left guard and then moving over to right tackle and center. They ask these guys to understand the concept of playing different positions because you can only have, you know, eight guys really on the offensive line in a game, and you never know what can happen.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Phone lines are still available if you want to give us a ring. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So there's one more practice coming up today, which is going to be a grinded-out type of practice. Then they'll have the day off, and then they'll get ready for the Friday preseason game. I think that in addition to some of the things we talked about earlier, Jeff, about players that you want to see, there's also a number of position battles to start watching in Friday's preseason game, because this is now the first opportunity where they're actually going up against guys that are not wearing their same jerseys. And the kicking battle is probably one of the key ones to keep close tabs on starting on Friday between Mike Nugent and Aldrick Rosas.
Yeah, and I would guess that, you know, from my experience when situations like this, I've had them in, you know, camps forever, is that they'll usually do them a couple different ways. They may have Aldrick Rosas go and play the first half and Mike Nugent play the second half, okay? The second half of a first preseason game, you got a lot of inexperience there in this, okay?
So especially on special teams.
Exactly. So if you want to get your young guy in there with somewhat starters, you get him in there in the first half, okay? Or to keep everybody on their P's and Q's and give the two guys an even advantage to, you know, kind of a good – they say, okay, Lance, you got the first kick, I got the second, and we rotate all the way through. Same with kickoff, same with extra points and field goals. That's how they could do it too.
In terms of alternating.
It's terms of alternating. Yeah. The other thing that I think is that important is that if you have – Aldrick, I had done that before where guys, you're going to get the first punt, I'm going to get the second. I didn't like that because you want to know something, that's not a game tempo. You're not used to having one play on and one play off.
It doesn't simulate what you're
going to be doing. So you want to give the guy a first half and then the second half is yours. That would be my opinion. They may give Aldrick Rosas the whole game. What do you need to see from Mike Nugent? He's a veteran. He's kicked in many big, big games.
That's fair.
You got to see about Aldrick how he can handle a game from start to finish. And from a coaching perspective and organizational standpoint, I'm hoping that the game presents itself in a way that he can have a pressure kick. Is it an end of the half 50 yarder? Is it a game at the end of the game to win? You want to put that's what these preseason games. Coaches want a 2-minute drill in preseason. They always want to right before the half or at the end of the game, and they want a kicker to have a pressure situation of a kicking down. Something that they can't get at practice. You can practice these all you want, but game situations, you want to kind of sometimes put yourself in those situations. And it's the one that the coaches really like is that 2-minute drill or even 1-minute drill before the half. They like to have that type of, you know, no huddle offense, and not only for the offense but for the defense too. We always think about the offense. Oh, 2-minute, we got to score. You got to remember about the defense too. They like to be put in those types of positions.
That they
too.
Need a stop or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I think it would be ideal if you get a two-minute drill before the end of the first half, and then you put yourself in field goal range, and then you treat it like, all right, hey, we need a cushion at the half.
You get
this
the
can
perfecta.
Give us a little bit of a lead.
You get the two, then you get a field goal and you get a two-minute drive. I think the other competition, one of the positions I like to look at is that tight end position. Things pretty stacked right now. You got Matt Lacoste, who's healthy and practicing and playing well. You got Will Tye, who's the incumbent there that's played last year. You got Jarrell Adams, who's a youngster. And then, you got Ingram, who no question he's making the team. Red Ellison and some of these other guys that are there. That's one position to look at. I think all the rest of them, you kind of have an idea. It's just more of the back end of the roster guys. Who's going to be that fourth and fifth receiver,
which
who's going to be the cornerbacks, who's going to be the fourth and fifth corners, something like that. I mean, for the most part, the backup quarterback position, the kicking position, the tight end position, those are the ones I'm going to be looking for.
And then the only other one that I'll throw out is defensive tackle next to Snacks to see who they rotate in and out. Robert Thomas, we mentioned, is dealing with soreness. I mean, clearly, if you're Robert Thomas, you want to do everything you can to make sure you're on the field to battle the likes of Dalvin Tomlinson as well as Jay Bromley. Bromley right now is listed on the first unofficial depth chart as the starter next to Snacks, but we've seen things drastically change from the time the first unofficial depth chart is released to the time that the regular season starts. But if you're any of those three guys, you want to be able to get some reps in this preseason game to maybe put yourself ahead of the rest of the competition.
I think you're going to see a lot of rotation in that defensive line. You're going to see a lot of guys coming and going, in and out. I think that's what Spags wants to do. I feel like he has some depth there. Whether who's the starter or not, I think you still have some good depth at that position. You want to identify who the one and the two guys are, and so we'll go from there.
Well, and you bring up a good point about rotating because, I mean, think about how a normal game is going to play out, Jeff. It's highly unlikely that defensive tackle, whoever does technically start the game, is going to be in for every single down.
No, he won't be.
So, therefore, you
two-down player and
you want that player to get a feel for, listen, you may be in for two snaps, and then we're going to take you out, and then we're going to bring somebody else in, and then maybe we're going to put you back in as a drive continues. So what better way, I guess, to simulate what they're actually going to have to deal with and endure during the course of the regular season than in a preseason game?
The other thing you got to look at is, and you mentioned it earlier, is the guys that are coming off of injuries. You look at Darren Thompson, a guy that was out of the lineup. You want to see how he can respond coming back into real football. I think you look at him to play quite a bit, just to see, get some of that rust off. The other thing you want to look at is some of the special teams situations. Okay, when everybody's going to get a hot dog on punt, watch the gunners, watch the guys that are running down, watch the Travis Rudolphs of the world, watch the guys working on the outsides of these special teams plays. Look at the punt return and punt and kickoff return guy. We know it's Dwayne Harris, okay, but this guy has to be the backup, has to be able to do it too, just in case there's an injury there. But the special teams in these preseason games is something that nobody really ever looks at, but this is where the back end of the roster guys are making it. Forget about the way they play other positions. This is where, if you want to kind of concentrate on who's going to make this team on the, number 42 to 53, those are the guys you got to look at, and that's what the coaches are looking at on special teams plays. Listen, there's about 30 special teams plays a game. You don't realize it, but there's 30 plays that a positional player can get in a football game without ever having to play his own position, whether it's receiver or this and that, because you're not getting – listen, if you're a fourth or fifth wide receiver, you're not getting 30 plays in a preseason game. A lot of these younger guys, special teams, they will be on every play during the special teams, the whole game. You're out. No, you're a first-year player. You're playing the whole game.
We need you. We're not putting another
stop. So I have my game plan as far as what it is my position goes, but I would be studying – my special teams playbook like the back of my hand when I go into that game.
Especially players also who don't have much special teams experience in college, and there's a number of them on this team.
And that happens all the time because you go look at a guy like Travis Rudolph. I keep bringing his name up. He was a stud at Florida State. I mean, and so he wasn't used to playing special teams. Jeremy Davis is a prime example of a guy that comes from UConn who was the man up there, never played at a lick of special teams, but was asked to do it his whole entire rookie year here. So these are kind of the things that the young guys have to understand.
With that being said, we will continue to preview the first preseason game and also recap everything that happened in today's practice on tomorrow's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is up and running at 10 a.m. Eastern, as always. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets as well. Anything we didn't address, we'll try to respond off the air. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.